Daily Traditionalist on Radio Aryan at RadioAryan.com.
Hello and welcome to the Daily Traditionalist. Today's date is Friday, the 3rd of November, 2017. You're listening to me, Sven Longshanks, and I'm very pleased to welcome back to the show Dr. Matthew Raphael Johnson. Matt, how are you doing today?
I'm doing great. Sorry about yesterday. It was beyond my control, but we'll make up for it today.
That's okay. Just glad that you're here today. And I was able to play a short podcast by Andy Donner entitled Theorycraft instead, which was particularly interesting. He's basically just saying that winning the argument is not necessarily going to mean that we win the fight. He does have a point there. It's good to be proved right, but we were proved right in Britain with Brexit. 17 million people voted and said that they wanted to leave the European Union, but we still haven't left the European Union. The country is still being invaded. But what it has done is it's helped to galvanize the people. It's helped to galvanize nationalism in Britain, which is rising. We're getting more and more people interested in our meetings. We've got more and more interest in us by the mainstream media. And I think that what we really need to have is a multi-pronged approach. We need to have people winning debates, because that is where we are strongest. This is why they try to shut us down, because they can't counter our facts. So we need to have debates where we can, like Richard Spencer is doing. We need to have demonstrations, like Matthew Heimbach is doing with the TWP, that draw attention to us and get us in the media. And we need to have a political movement, which sadly we are lacking over here in Britain, but we can see what's happening with the Alternative for Deutschland in Germany, the Freedom Party in Austria, Geert Wilders in Holland. Okay, they're civic nationalist parties, but they still agree with us on the main points, which is the important thing. We also need to have our flash mobs. We need to have people putting stickers up. And we need to have our own media, which is obviously what we're doing here at Radio Aryan and what we're doing with the Daily Traditionalist. So we need to be working on all fronts, I think, to counter white genocide. I don't think we should discount any of them because they're not as successful as the others. Well, what are your thoughts on that, Matt?
Well, I could talk for weeks on that. We're coming up, me personally, the 30-year anniversary of me being in this movement. And the hardest fact, the most profound thing that I've learned, and I still can't wrap my head around it, is the idea that I've spent my life studying and researching and building arguments and arranging facts in the proper logical way and presenting arguments and everything else, then go out into the world and realize that no one else does that. People have political and economic opinions based on what their parents tell them or what the regime says or what's easy or what justifies their lifestyle, anything but facts and logic. And so I think what Donner meant even deeper than what you said is that winning an argument doesn't mean much. The facts aren't really all that important. It's power that matters. Now, you're right about the multi-pronged approach, but we do have a maturity issue. You'll have people who will condemn these parties as so-called civic nationalists, as if we can afford ideological purity at this stage. You know, they're doing what they need to do to survive in those environments. We don't know what they really think. But we have a maturity issue. We have a dearth of true scholars who really, and certainly those in political theory who actually define some of these things better. And, you know, Donald Trump gets elected in America. And really, there is no organization to support him. He's, you know, he's been flapping in the breeze for all this time. Republicans don't want him, you know. So what you say is absolutely correct. And I guess even winning arguments, while it doesn't necessarily mean you have a convert, it is the slow process of chipping away at their little bubble that they live in.
Yeah, we have to take friends where we get them. I think we're in a position that we can't make enemies out of people that are on the alt-right. I think we have lots of different ideologies that you can say that are on the alt-right, and some of them may be conflicting in some areas, but in the main areas, then we're all in agreement. We're trying to prevent any more harm being done to the white race. And we can see that immigration is the main cause of this harm. We can see the people that are behind it, and anyone that's standing against even a small part of it. I would rather support than accuse them of being agents or supporting Zionism and things like that. So, I can see that Andy Donner's theory craft was good. He's very good at explaining his point. But at the same time, I don't think we can afford to just be that exclusive and ignore these other groups. Well, I've got a few stories to go into today, a few things to talk about. One thing that really caught my eye was entitled "Islamophobic Jury Didn't Have Enough Muslims, Says Convicted Rapist." And I'll read you a couple of quotes from this story. It says, "A man in prison for 12 years for raping and making death threats to his wife has launched an appeal because he says the jury contained too many white Catholics and not enough Muslims. The man convicted at Ireland's Central Criminal Court in 2016 argued that the jury was too ethnically and religiously homogenous to be fair, and insisted that the jury should have been warned about potential issues surrounding race and religion." And that's from the Times. And also, the leader of one of the Rotherham grooming gangs, Shabir Ahmed, has also used claims of Islamophobia to challenge his rape convictions. Mr. Ahmed lost an appeal against his possible deportation at the European Court of Human Rights, claiming that his all-white jury breached his human right to a fair trial. He claimed that members of the jury passed details to racists and said that his convictions were a conspiracy by police and members of the jury to scapegoat Muslims. Now, aside from the cheek of these Arabs in claiming that they're not getting a fair trial in the British Isles because it's the too many British people are there judging them and not Muslims, I think this is something that I have yet to see nationalists actually use this argument, but I think it's a strong argument to suggest that if you are in court and you're being accused of a hate crime, you're being accused of inciting religious or racial hatred against a minority, and you've got any minority whatsoever in the jury, I think you should be able to ask them to leave the jury. And if the judge is from any particular minority, you should be able to ask the judge. So you should be able to say, I'm not going to get a fair trial from this judge, because he is a minority, and it's a minority that is supposedly the victim when you're accused of inciting racial hatred. Like at the moment, we've got Jez Turner is accused of inciting racial hatred by a group of Jews that call themselves a charity, the Campaign Against Anti-Semitism. Now, they are claiming that they are victims. Jews as a whole are victims because he was basically speaking facts about Jewish power in Britain. But if it's a Jewish judge or there's any minorities that are on that jury, then you've got the so-called victims judging in the case. And that goes against one of the most fundamental laws that we have, that you cannot judge in your own case. You cannot, if you're the victim, you can't possibly be the judge. And I have yet to see anyone actually try this. So it's interesting that what we're seeing here is we're seeing the Muslims try this against us, but I have yet to hear of any white people trying it in any of these trials. And I think it's something that definitely should be spoken about and highlighted. What do you think, Matt?
I'm not sure what the law is in Great Britain, but in the United States, if it's a jury trial, depending on how severe the crime is, your defense attorney has a right to veto jurors. It's three, four felonies or more. I'm not sure. I think it may depend on the state. But you can veto at least a few. Now, I don't know how that would work in a hate crime case, but you would have a right to a jury in this case, and that would, I think, would be a valid argument. And I think that you can veto, in some states anyway, veto jurors regardless, for no reason at all. You're given that right, and you should use it. But in this case that we're talking about here, this is clearly being orchestrated. You know, the level of arrogance here is so shocking that they wouldn't be doing this without the backing of very powerful forces. And over the last few days, I've been reading more deeply into who these powerful forces are relative to the immigration, the so-called migrant crisis in Europe. And the Lawyers Guild the various European legal organizations are a very heavy part of this. So it does have a legal foundation. I hate to say it, but he's probably going to get his way. He's going to say that a jury of my peers has to be, you know, at least half Muslim or something like that. They're not my peers otherwise. I don't think that would fly in America because they've already defined what a peer is. But I'm not sure about the European Union. I have no idea.
Right, but if the so-called victims are a minority and you've got minorities in the jury, or you've got a minority that's, you know, got the wig on, that's the judge, surely that's against the law and something can be said about it. I mean, we've got a huge proportion of Jews that are judges and that are parts of our judiciary, and they preside over a lot of these cases. And yet nobody has pointed out the fact that, hang on a minute, you're a Jew. You're a minority. And this case is saying that it's a minority that is the victim. How are you going to be judging impartially when you are the supposed victim? In America, can you say, I don't want this guy on the jury because he's black, or I don't want this guy on the jury because he's Jewish or he's homosexual? Are you allowed to say that? Or do they just say you just don't have to give a reason? You just say you don't want them.
It depends on the state, but you do have the right. If it's a felony, I think it's three vetoes. I don't think you have to give a detailed reason. You wouldn't put it like that, of course. Now, in my county here in Pennsylvania, they're very, very strict about any conflict of interest. If there is the tiniest speck of conflict, they get rid of the judge. So in that sense, they're very scrupulous about that, I think. As far as race on the jury is concerned, all black juries in the inner city have a conviction rate of something like 8%. So the crime wave, the crime, the destruction of black areas is partially to do with these black juries. You know, and it's propaganda, you know. We can't put another black person in jail, something like that. So to a great extent, it's their own fault. But, you know, juries can do as they please. They don't have to follow the law. They don't have to worry about reasonable doubt. They can be told that, but they don't have to do it. And I wonder if juries are our friends or our enemies. Sometimes I haven't really made up my mind on that yet.
Well, I've done jury service before in the past, and the jury does get directed by the lawyers involved and by the judge. They try to tell the jury what they should be doing, but in the actual fact, the jury has the power to say, well, this is a ridiculous law. We think the guy's innocent because it's the law is wrong in itself. But they don't actually tell the jury that. They try to direct the jury. The jury that I was on, two of us just thought, well, this is absolutely ridiculous. But the rest of them went along with the direction that the judge had stated, and they accepted 10-2. But it was actually ridiculous what was going on. I'm bound not to talk about it. But they do direct the jury, which they're not supposed to do. You know, they're supposed to be completely impartial. And what they're saying over here in Britain at the moment is they're saying we've got too many blacks in the prison. Like half the prison is filled with non-whites, and it should only be 10% of the prison. So they're saying that the solution to this is to replace white judges with black ones. And when you have a black criminal, it's not to charge him in the first place, turn him back out into the community. That's how insane it's got in Britain.
Well, it gets worse than that. As far as, you know, Sweden and Norway and Germany, Denmark, there is a clear policy to avoid arresting these people. There's a clear policy to have very light sentences. Now, they can't force anyone to do this, but it was just yesterday I read that something like 85% of the Stockholm Police Department wants to quit, that Sweden is losing 3 policemen a day, and it's solely based on the fact that they're being told not to do their jobs. They have to turn their backs while the country is consumed and destroyed. So maybe there'll be a day where that kind of neutrality will cease. And we were talking about that in Shelbyville over the weekend with the Traditionalist Workers' Party. You know, how long will these policemen be neutral? I think most of the beat cops are on our side. You know, they see what goes on the street level every day. So, you know, it's how, when that's going to happen, when it's not, I simply don't know. I really do think, like you said, I think this guy is going to get his way, or these guys.
Well, it's like people are ignoring reality, aren't they? I mean, you can see the facts and the figures. You can see that there's a huge black crime wave, that there's a rape epidemic among Muslims, particularly Muslims from the Pakistan area. Everybody can see this. It's a racist rape epidemic that just goes over after white women. And yet when we speak about it, they try to silence us. They make excuses for the Pakistanis doing it. They call us racists for speaking up against it. And yet every day there's more and more evidence of this. And we've even got to a stage now where they are intimidating. The police are being used to intimidate venue owners into refusing to allow us to hire them to have our speeches. Recently, this was done for the Ian Stewart Donaldson tribute. There's a particularly good speech by Steve Frost at the John Tyndall Memorial Meeting talking about this. And basically, they tried to set up their festival, which they do every year. They managed to find a venue. The venue owners were really pleased. They made lots of money. They said that these people were really, really good people. They cleaned up after themselves. The playing fields that were used for camping were the cleanest that they had ever been. There was no trouble, no drugs, really good people. The police went mad. The police threatened to remove the license, said that they're never going to have another concert there without having to inform them again in the future, and that they must never have blood and honor there again. And yet there was no trouble. And you could say, well, okay, blood and honor have got a bad reputation. Maybe they've got a bad reputation. But the same thing is now being done to Tommy Robinson. And Tommy Robinson is now an author and a journalist. You know, he had hired out a venue in Manchester for 1,000 people. He'd got all top security there to look after the people. And it's basically just a book signing. It's just him signing his book. And the police have gone there and they've intimidated the venue owners and got the venue owners to refuse to allow him to be there. They said, but we can't do it. The police have told us we're not allowed to do it. And this is in Manchester. And in Manchester, just a few months back, we had a nail bomb set off in a concert, which ended up with 22 people being killed, 79 children being injured by a Libyan suicide bomber, and the mosque where he was radicalized is still open. So the mosque is still open. The Muslims are still going there. They're able to gather. And Tommy Robinson, who basically exposes crimes of the Muslims and why they do what they do, his book is about the Quran and why Islam is the way that it is, he's banned from being in this venue while the mosques are encouraged. Everything is totally back to front, and the police are being used to do this. So it's not just the Antifa that are being used against us. The police are now being used to intimidate venues to shut us down as well. Have you come across anything like this in America, Matt? And what are your thoughts on this as well?
Well, the Murfreesboro demonstration was a setup by the police department. It was really an arrest trap. I don't know the details there, but the point I want to make is that I don't think low level officers like this one bit, and I think morale is going down. And I told you about the Swedish situation. And this, of course, coming from higher up. I read a Washington Post editorial from it may have been last year. And the argument was actually, and I can't believe this, I had to read it three times. The author, whose name I can't remember, I think it was Stevens, said the reason there's been a spike in rapes in Sweden is because they just changed the law in 2005. The Green Party wanted to redefine the word rape legally. Therefore, anything can be considered rape in Sweden, and this is why there's this massive increase in rapes. Now, I went right into the web and looked up Sweden's legal definition of rape, and of course, it's the same as for everywhere else. That's a ridiculous laugh. It may have been true. I mean, the Green Party may have tried to change the definition at one point. It didn't go through. The guy knows he's lying. The guy knows he's making up. It was a really bad story as well, claiming that anything, even rubbing up against a woman, would be considered rape in Sweden now. This is why there's been this huge spike in rapes. And yet it takes 2 seconds to look up the Swedish law in English on what defined rape, et cetera. It's no different than any other country. So he made up a story. I mean, that suggests such tremendous coercion over these people. I mean, the politicians who are signing on to these things, they know that their kids are in danger too. They may live in upper class neighborhoods, but they still have to go to the city sometimes. They still go to shopping malls and everything else. They know what's happening here. They know exactly why these rapes have exploded, and they're doing it anyway. And I don't know if the center is going to hold for much longer. The media I know in Germany has redefined the word rape is now called a misunderstanding. Misunderstanding. If you're from North Africa or the Middle East, they call you, they say that you have dark white skin, or that you are a man of Mediterranean background. A gang rape at a music festival in near Stockholm last year. They claimed that the perpetrators were Swedish. Well, they were in Sweden, so I guess they're Swedish. No, they weren't. There wasn't an actual Swede among them. But the people who are doing this, who are lying, they know what they're doing. And they know that they could be the victim of it tomorrow. So that really suggests a huge amount of coercion and force. How long can the system, do this? How long can the system continue to do this without some of these people just losing it and saying, no, we're not going to lie about this anymore? And you have feminists defending rape. Out of nowhere, they're defending rape so long as the person is non-white. I never thought I'd live to see that day. But how long is that kind of nonsense going to hold? And like I said about police neutrality, how long can that hold after a while? The Stockholm Police Department, and same thing for Oslo in Norway, is near collapse. And so this is, I'm wondering what we're, these people are pushing so hard. I wonder if this is really sustainable in the long term.
Well, we've already had a Euro MP. His daughter was raped. I'm not sure she was killed as well by immigrants. And we've also had some homosexual that was murdered by Muslims within that nail bomb attack in Manchester. And his family are still going on about how much they love Muslims and how much they love refugees. It's like the people have got some kind of Stockholm syndrome. And you're right about the way that they're trying to cover this up. I mean, in Germany and in Sweden, they won't actually tell you the ethnicity of the criminal. In fact, people in Sweden have had to go looking through all the individual cases to see the names of the criminals. So they know that if they're called Mohammed or Ahmed, then they're not white. So they've been able to work out the percentage of non-white rapists just by looking at the names. Because in Sweden, all they will say is, it's a Swede. It's a man. So you can see that they're having problems trying to work out who it is that's doing this. But in Britain, they've done the complete opposite. They've tasked David Lammy, this black MP, to collect all the information, all the data that we have on the life outcomes of the different ethnicities, which is basically saying how many blacks are there in prison, how many Muslims are there in prison, what are they in there for violent crimes, have they got a job, all this sort of stuff that in Sweden and in Germany they've banned people from doing, they've done in Britain. So they've got the figures. They've got these figures there saying we've got a massive epidemic of black crime. We've got an epidemic of Muslim rape. So they've got the figures there. But instead of doing anything about it, they're saying, well, we just have to not lock them up. We'll just have to not prosecute these blacks. We'll just have to clamp down on the far right even harder for speaking up about these crimes. So even when you show them the facts, they still blindly carry on with what they're doing. I think it's a delusion, Matt. I really do. I think, it says in the Bible, if people reject God, they will be sent a strong delusion. And I don't see how you could be any more deluded than to see the figures of rape and violent crime being committed by blacks and Muslims and then completely ignore it. So even if Germany and Sweden were to bring out the figures and identify the ethnicity behind this, I still think they would carry on doing exactly what they're doing, because that's what we're seeing in Britain. It's absolute madness.
Well, and I think you mean it literally, that we're talking about delusion.
Yes, yes, totally. It has to be, so, doesn't it?
Well, that's what sin does. I mean, we know that depression, people who suffer from depression, don't see the world the way we do. Everything is dark. Everyone's out to get them. Everyone hates them. They see something that isn't real. And I think that over time, their ideology has reprogrammed, so to speak, their brain, that they could see that those figures right in front of them and ignore it and say it's not real. It's not true. Bracket it somehow and go on with what they're doing. My question is, how sustainable is this? And the point that they have, these parties still have millions of voters. They've canceled music festivals all over Northern Europe because the rape issue is so overwhelming. A lot of the time, it's just studied responses. You know, they'll talk about, you know, yes, there's been many Islamic rapes here, but we can't draw any conclusions. It's like they're automatons. You know, they have this program slogan that they put out there. But at the local level, beat cops, you know, local politicians and everything else, I can't imagine how sustainable this is. There's got to be a point where they crack, because they're pushing so hard that, you know, even feminists, I mean, how many feminists are simply going to tolerate rape like they're doing, even defending it? The sign, you've seen the sign, you know, we'll trade racists for rapists. You imagine feminists saying that. How sustainable is this? When is the center going to crack? And if the economy continues to go south, that may just be it. At least I hope so.
It's a multicultural hysteria, isn't it? And you bring up the feminists there as well. It's a whole broad section of our society that is just living in a hallucinatory world of make-believe. And it doesn't matter what happens, doesn't matter how violent and horrific things get, they still chant the mantra of diversity is a strength and we want more refugees. You say there about the police, and what about the bobbies on the beat? I mean, surely they must see this. I mean, they're the ones that see the knife crime going on in London and the acid being thrown in people's faces. I mean, that crime just didn't exist 10 years ago, throwing acid in people's faces. And these police must see this, and yet they're being told, well, we've got to set up a new hate crimes unit, and we've got to ask for some more money for more hate crimes officers, and we're going to have to advertise on Twitter for anyone who's got hurt feelings to get in touch with us, because it's so serious, people saying mean words on Twitter. I mean, surely they must see the hypocrisy and the stupidity in what they're doing in going after people for criticizing the people behind this while letting these horrific crimes go on. I mean, what did they join up with the police for in the first place? Surely it was to fight crime. It wasn't to silence the people who were criticizing these crimes and pointing out who it is that's behind this. I get so fed up when they just attack all men and they blame all men for things. Like this Harvey Weinstein thing. Oh, it's all men. No, it's not. That's a Jewish man. That's Jewish behavior. And the Jews have admitted that. They've even written articles on the fact that it's Jewish behavior. White people behave differently. I just hope that more people do wake up to this and see what's really going on and the ethnicities that are behind it, Matt. We're coming near the end of the podcast. I don't know if you want to add any more to that before I mention something about Nazi Bitcoin wallets.
Oh, the last point I want to make here is this massive increase in crime due to the immigration. Over half of it is sexual in nature. Not robbery, not murder. It's sexual. And I think that there's a very good reason for that. That when an invading army conquers a place, taking the women is the ultimate sign of victory. I think that's why black men in America seek after white women.
Yes, symbolic.
How can someone? Yeah, exactly. They call it booty for a reason. You know, you can't have people raised with anti-white hatred their whole lives suddenly want to fall in love with a white woman. No, this is symbolic. This is victory. This is how we rub the white man's face in it. This is why the divorce rate is 700% higher in those kind of marriages. Why? Domestic violence is almost universal in those kind of marriages. It is hatred. It is about humiliating the white man. And that's the reason I'm so vehemently opposed to it in this country, and why it's always a black male and a white female. And I think the white female is scared to death of being called racist, so she has to say yes. I've seen it with my own two eyes.
Well, this is what we see when they're victims, when the white females are victims, and they say, well, it was a Muslim or it was a black boyfriend that did this. They are accused of being racist. That's exactly what happened to these girls in Rotherham. You know, for over a decade, they were going into the police and saying what was going on, and they were accused of being racist. And anyone that spoke up about it was accused of being racist because our people are blind. They've been blinded. They turn their backs on God, and that's the reward for it. They can't see the reality of what's really going on. And people who love the truth can see what's going on. And that's why nationalists can see what's going on. That's why, you know, you don't have to be a Christian to see what the truth is. I mean, Christ is the truth. So if you are a supporter of the truth, whether you are, you know, you're supporting the idea of Christ or not is irrelevant. If you're, the fact that you are supporting the truth means that you are supporting Christ. You know, that's the way that it works. Nationalism is inherently Christian because it's based on the truth. And if your eyes are open to the truth, then the blindfold has been lifted. I just hope and pray that, for more people, this blindfold is lifted and we managed to put a stop to it. Matt, I just want to say at the end here, before we finish, about Bitcoin wallets. There's a Nazi Bitcoin wallet site which apparently says that we've got $800 in Bitcoins. We don't. We have less than a third of that in Bitcoin. It's also got ludicrously high amounts for Weave and Stormfront. So don't pay any attention to it because it's untrue. And we really do appreciate your support when you can send us Bitcoin. That's the only way we've got of receiving donations, and we do require them to keep the station going and also to buy equipment. And that you'll find that in the top left-hand sidebar of the RadioArian.com site. Matt, thank you very much for coming on today. Thank you very much, listeners, for listening. Hopefully, Matthew Heimbach will be back with you on Monday. He's ill at the moment. So until then, have a great weekend and hail victory.
You've been listening to The Daily Traditionalist on Radio Arian at RadioArian.com.